additional episode of Everything is Canada, Sunlight's podcast. I'm your host, Steve Duncan. However you may have found your way here, thanks so much for tuning in. On this podcast, we invite authors from all genres onto the show to discuss their latest books and novels, as well as just about anything else that comes to mind. If you want to reach me, there are several ways to do so, but the best way is to email me at steve@cinelinks.com, or you can always find me on Twitter at SteveDunk5 or at Everything Canon. Today in the show, I'm talking to Zoe Hanamakuta all about her debut book, and it's a good one, the YA sci-fi fantasy Gearbreakers, which is being described as two girls on opposite sides of a war discover they're fighting for a common purpose and falling for each other. Perfect for fans of Pacific Rim, Pierce Brown's Red Rising Saga, and Marie Lu's Legend series. I absolutely love this book, and there's almost no chance it doesn't land in my top 10 for this year. It's got a ton of heart, some real-world messaging that we should all appreciate, a pair of lead characters you're not likely to forget, and more beautiful mecha action than you can shake a stick at. We talk about the cinematic appeal of the book, all those mechas, of course, found family and first meetings, gear breakers, and much, much more. While this is a spoiler-free discussion, the odd minor detail may slip out, so if you haven't read the book and don't wish to be spoiled at all, better stop listening now, but definitely double back once you've read it. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. As always, around these parts, we encourage supporting authors and stories that affirm the lives of people other than ourselves. Each time we either engage in a conversation, whether it be online or face-to-face, if we ever do that again, or each time we participate in the market with our purchasing choices, this, of course, should be done all year long. Also, June, of course, is Pride Month, so support our LGBTQ plus authors any way that you can, either by boosting them online, buying their books, leaving reviews, etc. And also, that kind of support shouldn't end June 30th, so try and be an ally all year long if you can. All right. Are you still 20? 20-year-old Zoe Hanamakuta. 21-year-old Zoe Hanamakuta is a Korean-American writer, currently attending the University of Washington in Seattle, majoring in English with a creative writing focus and minoring in history of religion. She grew up in Colorado, where she developed a deep love of Muay Thai kickboxing and nurtured a slow and steady infatuation for fictional worlds. She enjoys writing deteriorating worlds inhabited by characters with bad tempers, skewed morals, and big hearts. Sounds like Jenny a little bit, doesn't it? When she needs to unwind, Zoe sews runes onto the belt loops of her jeans and embroiders "Bite Me" on the back pockets. She hopes if she feeds the crows around her campus enough croutons, they'll begin to gift her quarters so she can say the laundry is bird-funded. She's here today, though, to talk about her YA sci-fi debut, Gearbreakers, which is being described as two girls on opposite sides of a war discover they're fighting for a common purpose and falling for each other. It's perfect for fans of Pacific Rim, Pierce Brown's Red Rising Saga, and Marie Lu's Legend series. Let me say this as clear as I can say it. I absolutely fucking love this book. And listen to me now as I beg Zoe to send me Gearbreakers 2, even more gear breaking. That's my title. Please welcome to the show, Zoe Hanamakuta. Hi, Zoe.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Is all that information still relevant? Is that still?
Yeah, absolutely.
Mostly current. Mostly current. Were those comps, were those your ideas or was that the publisher?
I think I only brought forward Pacific Rim.
Right.
Was like what I brought forward.
Yeah. Which, I mean, that one makes sense for sure. I think the other ones too. I haven't actually read any of Marie Lu's stuff, but I did read Red Rising Saga. So, It all makes sense. Comps are weird, right? I mean, you're trying to just like offer up things that give somebody a rough idea of kind of what you're going for. But I'm telling you, one day this Gearbreakers is going to be a comp. I can't wait. I promise you. I'm over the moon to talk to you because I really, really do love this book so much. Like there's zero chance this book doesn't land at top of my list at the end of the year. I mean, I've already read most of the stuff to the end of the year already anyways. So barring some surprise book, I can't see it not landing high for me. So yeah, I'm really excited to talk to you. So thank you very much. As always during this time, I like to wish you safe and wellness during the pandemic. I know to you and your family and friends.
Appreciate it.
Definitely. This transition part scares me actually more than because there's the rules are like kind of like wishy-washy, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
we're not totally
sure. Like,
yeah.
How are you handling it? You're doing all right?
I'm doing good. I've been on deadline for the past 2 weeks, so I've like kind of been inside. I like went and got groceries once like a week and a half ago, and otherwise I haven't been around a lot of people.
That's, you know, I talked to a lot of authors and that's the thing, right? I mean, you're on deadlines, you're writing, you're shut in anyways. So, and like people like me who don't have a social life, like it just doesn't cramp our style that much, does it?
So oh my gosh. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the weird part will be when it's over and I have no more excuses, but We're gonna talk about the book, non-spoilers, of course, but a couple things I wanted to mention, of course, first. I was actually doing a bit of research, and I watched some of your vlogs, and you had a really, really, no, they're great. And you had a really great one, your 2020 review one, where you were sort of like, working with your herbs and stuff. Do you remember that one? Yeah. And your mom kind of pops in the background at one point, which was awesome. And I want to talk about your mom in a second, but great. That was a really great video because you've got really fucking great taste when it comes to books.
You held up
half a dozen or so. And a couple of them really jumped out at me, especially I'm a huge Poppy Wars fan.
Oh my God.
Rebecca Kwong to me is the top. She's the top of the mountain for me. Like I just
own the genre, honestly.
It's I don't know. I kind of think it might be the best fantasy trilogy of all time. Like I'm talking
I would say, like, for me personally, definitely a favorite.
Yeah, like it's so great, right? Like is she, somebody you look up to or in any way at all or
definitely. I just like, I haven't read fantasy that was that brutal before, and it's really so masterfully done.
It's so brutal. Like, so it's depressing.
It's so depressing, but like, just like the characters are handled like really well. Like, they're not good people.
No.
Like really real.
They're very real, and because it's historical fantasy type, it's just like, I like it when they're, when we write stuff like that, because it's, it leaves no room for idiots like me to be like, well, that wouldn't have happened, right? You know what I mean? Like, because that's it, it did happen, and that's just the way it goes. So, because a lot of it was based on some true events and a true point in history, right? In China's history. So, it's so great, but it is brutal. I posted something the other day where I was like, I'm not ready to read the trilogy again yet. Like, I'm not, I have to be like emotionally ready. Like, yeah. Most of the books I read, are to get over the Poppy War trilogy. So anyways, one day I will sit down and I'll go through it again, but I think it's going to be a while, but it's not like it was that long ago, right? It was end of last year that
The
Burning God came out, but all right. But anyways, I wanted to mention that because that was a great vlog, and you do have really great taste in books. So I just wanted to mention that real quickly. A lot of people, you're basically brand new to the scene, sort of. Just give us a bit of history here. Like, when did you start writing? When did you start thinking, like, you want to do this as a career? Stuff like that.
I definitely always wanted to be a writer. It was just, like, the art I really fell into and, like, find the most comfort and fun in. So in high school, I started getting kind of serious. I wrote, like, a full-length book. It was, like, terrible, unedited when I sent it out. But, like, that was like sophomore year high school, and then I wrote Gearbreakers senior year when like that didn't pan out. So I don't know. I just wanted to start early because it's just like that's just what I knew what I wanted to do.
Yeah. Were you aware at the time like how long it can take sometimes? Like, because it can take years, right? Years and years. So your first book you queried got rejected, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Did you get any notes for Gearbreakers? How many did you get?
Let's see. For Gearbreakers, I only got one offer on Gearbreakers. I was definitely like more successful than my first query round with that terrible first book.
Right.
Yeah, but I was glad to have like kind of like that trial run almost, because then like I knew what I was kind of more what I was doing going in.
Sure.
My parents still thought I was getting scammed. I didn't tell them about anything until I had signed with an agent, and they're like, "You're definitely getting scammed." And I was like, "Am I getting scammed?" Like 18 signing these contracts. Like,
that's so funny. How was rejection for you? Everyone handles it differently. It sounds like it didn't deter you very much, but.
No, I mean, I knew it was a part of it. Like, I'm very, I think, like, I've kept the mindset, really, that, like, maybe it's pretentious, but just, like, I know, like, art's really subjective, so, yeah. Like, if I was doing something else and people weren't liking it, I think I would be more deterred, but I figure it's, like, the mindset I'm trying to solidify coming up to the release date next month is, like, if people don't like it, then it's none of my business. It's only my business if people get a kick out of it.
It's, I've had this discussion before where I'm under the opinion that art is process. Like, that's something I can never take away from you, right? When you wrote Gear Breakers, when you conceived of it, thought of it, slept with it, cried over it, you know, punched a wall, whatever. That's, we can never take that away from you. But once it's out in the world, it's just a product. Yeah. And I can, I can throw it in the garbage. I can use it as a leg stand. I can, you know, put pour coffee on. I can do whatever I want with it. But once it's out in the world, so this is more sort of what you just said, to your point, like, there's not much, you have no control over what people think of it or how they view it, or if they're those idiots that don't finish it. Or I have this like hard rule. I will never not finish a book. Unless it's unless it's like offensive, though. I mean, like, but I wouldn't. I wouldn't be reading that book anyways, though, right? Because we know so much about the books now before we read them. Like, unless they tricked me into reading like a fucking racist Nazi book or something, or something. You know what I mean? Like, but I don't. These people that, like, you know, you read reviews and they're like DNF. I'm like, fuck you. Anyways, but yeah, you're right. Once it's out there, there's not much you can do about it, and that's a good attitude if you can keep that, right? Like, just sort of, it's out there. Let's just, you know, let's see what they think and then move on. So, although I have a pretty good feeling that people are going to be really stoked about Gear Breakers. I think I know a couple people that have read it, and they share the same opinion that it's the greatest thing ever. So, so all right, then let's talk about Gear Breakers a little bit, just sort of like where the idea came from.
Let's see. Well, I've always loved like the mecha genre, just like that trope in sci-fi. But like all the mecha media I was consuming, like Neon Evangelion and like Pacific Rim, it's like the robots are like on the good side, you know. Yeah, right. But I was thinking, like, right, oh my, yeah,
that's a good point.
Yeah. Yeah, but like the physical element of them is like really, really scary. I've always had problems with like just like giant monsters. I don't know, just like, it's like a deep, dark fear of mine. I guess if we were in like a fantasy world, it would definitely be the scary portions. But
giant robots are the scary, you mean?
Or just like giant monsters in general. Sure. I also have a problem with like when the monster is really skinny and tall. Like, I don't know, it just gives me the heebie-jeebies. And I was like, but I kind of want to do something with it. So I was like, let's make them evil. And let's make them gods, because I kind of like that smeared like fantasy line.
Sure.
In it.
Sure. It kind of raises,
I don't know, it just all grew.
Right. And I mean, you're right. It kind of reminds us of our place in the world too, right? Of where we are in the pecking order too. When something that big is standing about to step on you, you get a pretty good idea that you're insignificant. So one thing though, you introduced, though, you know, sure, the robots are they're definitely on the bad side, the bad team so far anyways. Who knows, maybe Gear Breakers 2, you flip the script on us. But it's the person controlling the robot in a lot of ways, right, that sort of determines the actions of the, you know, of these mechs in a lot of ways too, right? So it's not, you know, in a lot of ways, like, they're just these things that are easily you know, influenced, and when the person controlling the mech has a bad day, you know, a lot of people can die, right? So it's interesting too how you use these mechs, you know, the different types of mechs are all sort of classic Phoenix, Valkyrie, you know, Paladin, sort of like, these are, when we think of these things, we conjure up not evil, right? They're sort of classic sort of like you know, guardians of the good and keepers of goodwill, right? So talk about sort of picking the names for the mechs, because they're really, I thought they were really cool and really creative.
Yeah, I definitely wanted it to I don't know, read like it's definitely like a religion built around these mechas,
right?
But also like the implicit good that religion is supposed to like invoke.
Supposed to. Doesn't always, but yeah. This thing is like, just, you know, obviously, I mean, you can't help being some of the influences, but like, there's just a really strong sort of visual cinematic appeal to it, right? I mean, I'm sure you must have sort of had these images in your head when you were writing it. I did reading it. Let's play a little hypothetical, you know, let's say Joe Hollywood calls you tomorrow, and what would you like? Movie, series, live action, animated? I mean, there was a time when I would have said animated for sure, but, and probably still would, but like the technology is so great now, you can almost anything is possible, even with live animation, with live action too, right?
Oh yeah, I've definitely thought about like live action something. I worry for movie adaptations. I feel like series usually get some closer to like the mark of the, you know, author's head, but something animated would also be so kick-ass. I think people are doing cool stuff with that too. I couldn't choose. I'll take anything.
I'll take anything. just whatever. Just pay me. Yeah. I agree. I think it, like a series just gives you so much more breathing room, right? You're not, you're less hampered. You're less hampered by time. And because this is this a duology or a trilogy?
It's a duology.
Okay. So, I mean, like you're going to cover a lot of ground in two books and, you know, to squeeze that into an hour and a half or 2 hour film, that's pretty hard to, you know, get the point across. Right. And while live action is, like I said, the technology is pretty great. I mean, I'm just such a big fan of animation. So that would be my choice. Animated series is the way to go, I think, for Gear Breakers. I'm a cover to cover person. I read everything in between the covers. Right. So one of the things, in your thank you, your acknowledgments at the end, I thought your note about your mother was really, really sweet, really thoughtful. And it was interesting because you said something like, even though there are no parents in this book, you know, the thought is there, the sentiment is there. Just talk about that a little bit, because that's important too, right? Because it is important to the story of the book, right? Because they're orphans.
Yeah.
Right.
It's supposed to be that thing where it's like there's no one looking out for them, and so they kind of just ended up on you know, like in the war. They have a place in the war and they can only really look out for each other because they can't really walk away. They've been presented with like a something they can physically do about it, and now they can't walk away. And you know, it's terrible and it shouldn't happen, and they're like gonna do terrible things and it shouldn't happen, and it it has to, because you know, you're put on one side, and it's really hard to like break out of that headspace where there shouldn't be sides at all.
Right, that's a good point. Could you yourself, do you think you could survive in this world? In the world you created? I couldn't. There's no way. I'm way too soft for that.
I do what I have to do, I guess. I'm not really up for the physical stuff, to be honest.
Oh, me neither. I'd be like the scenes, you know, where they're back at the headquarters reading books, romance novels. That's me. That's what I'd be doing. and that's the thing too, right? Like we don't know. When you've never been tested, how are you supposed to know how you would react, right? Like, I mean, it's like in a post-apocalyptic situation. I try not to cast aspersions on anyone because we're all capable of who knows what evil type of shit, right? Except for Milo, he can eat shit, but the other ones, I give them plenty of room. The other ones, but not him. He gets no slack from me, and the readers will find out why. But hey, we're there. So, anyways, back to covers. There, we were talking a second ago. This cover is fantastic, and I know you wrote something about how much you loved it. Talk about the first time you saw this cover and its importance to you, just as a half Korean, right, half white, half Korean person. Just seeing that cover, I remember the first time I saw it and I was thought it how great it was, but for you it's extra special, right?
Yeah, I definitely like, I remember it really specifically. I was I was in my mom's house because she was like, the pandemic started and she was like, come home right now. So I was at her house, and I remember getting the email when I just woke up, and I'm just like there leaking tears on my bed, like grinning at my screen. I don't know, it's just really cool. I feel like we don't get a lot of Asian girls in sci-fi, and then we have half white, half Asian girl on the cover, and I was like, it looks kind of like me, that's cool. I don't know, and the whole thing is just so like, it like reads, it's almost very like comic book-y, and I get a kick out of it. Like I love it. I love it.
I love the color scheme. I think it's badass. I can't remember, sorry, remind me who did the cover again.
It was Taj Francis, and okay. The designer was Michael Burroughs.
Okay, Taj Francis and Michael Burroughs. Okay, it's amazing, and yeah, it does mean a lot to see, you know, representation on the cover like that. Because I mean, even though you're sort of just getting going with your career, I mean, you know, you've probably spoken to a lot of authors who've been around a lot longer, and it means a lot. Right, that type of representation, because it hasn't been there, right? It hasn't, right? It sucks and it's shitty, and it, you know, we know the reasons why, just because of, you know, like systematic white racist bullshit. But it's great, and I love seeing it. And I mean, I don't see how anyone could see this cover and not. This is like one of those situations where you can absolutely judge a book by its cover, because it's so great. And immediately, I remember the first time I saw it, I was like, "Who are they? Why is she holding a sword? what the hell is that thing behind them? I'm in." It was like, I remember that the first time I saw it, like way back when, right? When I'm sort of, you know, like we get these things early, right? And I remember, like, you know, mapping out 2021 a long time ago, and that was one of the book's first covers I remember seeing, and I was like, oh yeah, I'm in. Cool. It's one of those things where you just, and then you read the summary and you're like, ah, I'm just gonna love this book. There's no way I'm not gonna like this book. I mean, there's a minimum, right? I'm going to like it for sure. Then it's only a matter of how much either I'm going to love it or am I going to become obsessed with it, right? So far I'm obsessed with it. Okay. Gear breakers. Do you want to practice? You've seen these and done a few of them already, right? You get the same five questions and, you know, what's the book about? So do you want to practice your elevator, what the book is about, or you want me just to read the summary? It's totally up to you.
Could you read the summary? Because last time I was on a panel the other day, and I totally messed up the summary trying to do it in my head.
I know a lot of others, they have to write it down. They keep it sort of like a post-it note on their computer just so they can read it. Yeah. All right. Gear breakers. We went past praying to deities and started to build them instead. The shadow of Godelia's tyrannical rule is spreading, aided by their giant mechanized weapons known as windups. War and oppression are everyday constants for the people of the Badlands who live under the thumb of their cruel Godelia overlords. Actually, you're going to have to help me with Eris's last name. Shindanai?
Shindanai,
okay. Eris Shindanai is a gearbreaker, a brash young rebel who specializes in taking down windups from the inside. When one of her mission goes awry, she finds herself in a Godelia prison. Eris meets Sona Steelcrest, a cybernetically enhanced windup pilot. At first, Eris sees Sona as her mortal enemy, but Sona has a secret. She has intentionally infiltrated the windup program to destroy Godelia from within. As the clock ticks down to their deadliest mission yet, a direct attack to end Godelia's reign once and for all, Eris and Sona grow closer as comrades, friends, and perhaps something more? You don't actually call it Earth. So that's it. And one of the things I wanted to ask you right away was, is this Earth? You don't, unless I missed it.
It's Earth. It's okay. Really, really far in the future. Definitely okay. A book that I kind of mentioned how it's there.
Okay, I was just going to say, I was like thinking of that today, and I'm like, I don't know if she actually ever calls it Earth or not, but...
I definitely don't. I don't.
No, okay, yeah. So I didn't miss that then, that's good. But, so it's in the distant future Earth, okay.
Yeah.
So that's the summary, that pretty much sums it up, it's pretty good. Is there, like, you know, beyond, that's just promotional language, right? Is there something beyond that that you feel is like the heart of the book that maybe doesn't, that gets missed in that summary at all, or is that kind of sum it up pretty good?
I think, like, I would be happier if, like, they had mentioned I don't know how they would mention it in the pitch, but, like, just something about, like, Iris's family, because I feel like that's really important. Like, it's a big driving factor, and it's, like, not their, like, it's not just their love story, it's also, like, their family. I love the family.
Yeah, no, you're right. That kind of gets into the sort of meat of the story a little bit too much, maybe, right, for the summary, but... Maybe just throw in like a found family thing or something. Maybe that's the best way to put it. But there is actually like real family in it too, though, right? Her and Jenny are actually related. So, but they are a family, and that's one of the great things about so these gear breakers who are professional mecha destroyers, we'll call them. They're from all over the place, and they all got different stories and all different reasons why they're there and why they're fighting and all these great things, and they've found each other in this shithole and like for a common good, and they believe in what they're doing, and they stick by each other. It's a pretty great that's one of the many themes in this book, is that sort of, right, that like lost boys and girls found family motif.
Yeah, like finding something to fight for when there is supposed to be nothing left. I love it. It's like really, really a common trope, but I love it.
Well, that's it, right? Because I mean, it's in one sense they could just do nothing and sort of live like a meek life, right? With not much joy, but they could probably live, you know what I mean? If they wanted to, like a full life. And I just mean like, you know, chronologically, right? They could right? They could just live if they wanted to. It wouldn't be a great life, but no, they're choosing the more dangerous path because they believe in what they're doing. It's pretty great. Every book sort of has like, you know, this has that one, that moment when I know anyways for myself that the book is going to be goes from like good to great, like when an early sort of moment when you realize, okay, you're in for something special. And like I said, this book checks a lot of boxes for me personally, but there was this line early on that was, I knew right away that you were fucking on point. So I'm just going to read the line to you. So, just pretty things, suffocating hard truths. I have long learned to be cautious of pretty things, of beauty, of the grace of gods formed from steel and wire. Do you remember that line, Zoe, at the
Yeah,
beginning?
I do. Chapter one, I
Oh,
think.
wait, that's a fucking great line.
Oh,
That's a really great line. And when I remember reading that, I like sort of stopped, closed the book, thought about it for like a few minutes. Like I even went to the bathroom to think about it. And I'm just like, and that was the line for me, because that's really early on. And I'm like, you've read a lot of stuff, right? Sometimes it's just surface level robots fighting monsters and people trying to survive. And it can be really just surface level stuff, right? Like important and good entertaining stories. But this line, I think you're deeper than maybe even I get the sense you give you credit for. I don't know. But I think it's a beautiful line. And that sentiment right there, if people are listening, carries through the rest of the book. And that was the thing that like, I'm not gonna say it surprised me, but it was one of the sort of like things that like made me very happy is that this book, you try and sort of like look at some hard truths about people being put in these positions and the things people, the lengths they have to go or they're willing to go to protect the people they love. And that can be like we talked about family, found family, friends, whatever. And you don't pull too many punches. Like this is a pretty brutal book. Like there's a lot of violence in this book, right? Like there's blood. There's a lot of blood in this book. Was there, did you, where were you on that line? Did you have to scale back at any point? Like how was editing this book for you? Was there any notes about too bloody, Zoe, like too much blood?
There is like my editor is pretty brutal with it. She loves all the fight scenes, which I'm glad about, but
Yep.
oh, I remember there was this one line. Oh my gosh, I don't know. I can't say anything specific and
That's
spoil.
fair. That's
But there
fine,
was
yeah.
this one scene where like Sona, she like cuts off someone's arm, and my
Yep.
editor was like, "Let's delete that." And I was like, "Okay." That was the only point, I think.
That's
She
the part that
loves
there,
those
but there's
people.
another scene. It's hard to talk about this book without spoilers, but there's actually bloodier scenes than that in this book. But anyways, and there is some trigger stuff here, like you know, and people are like there's some torture scenes in this. There's a couple of really, you know, pretty you know, damaging scenes as far as blood and violence is concerned. So I'm surprised they cutting the arm off. That
I
seems
think it was just like a point where it's just like,
too
it's
much.
not necessary.
Right, sure, okay. You're like, you didn't need to cut that person's arm off, so yeah. Oh God, that's so funny. You know, this is yeah, there's a definitely this is a it's no secret, it's not a spoiler to say there's you know, Iris and Sona are start to become fond of one another, for sure. And in any sort of like romantic n sense, the first time, you know, these two characters see or meet each other is always a big moment in a book, right? It's the very first time they see each other, and their first meeting is really great. It's the scene in the hangar, the first time Sona sees her, right? And she's sort of like, it's a really great scene visually because you can picture, you know, you describe it so well, and Eris is like trapped, kind of, and you know, like a caged tiger in a way, right? Knowing this story was going to be, you know, a relationship story in a lot of ways. Was that scene, was that, did that first encounter prove to be difficult for you, or did it just come really naturally, really easily?
I liked writing that scene. It was like the grandness of it. I
Yeah.
had a couple other scenes I was playing with and replacing that, but definitely like when I first had the idea of Gearbreakers, I did not have a love story planned. It's just
Right.
something I threw in because I like I always love that. And I just wanted to write it basically. But definitely at first, it was only supposed to be the gear breakers.
Mm.
I kind of want it to be like more complex with the sides in it. So definitely that first scene, she's like so fun to write. I really wanted, I don't know.
It like really knocks the wind out of Sona, right? Like she's almost like, it's almost like, it's like a lightning strike, right? It's just like, boom. And then she like, if you could point, like that's, I mean, she doesn't understand it necessarily at that point, but that's like, she just fell in love with her.
Basically.
Right? Like the very second she saw her and, you know, yeah, she doesn't have the, you know, the language maybe yet to describe it, but it knocks her on her ass, doesn't it? That very first time she sees her and you wrote it really well. And I think you're in love with her a little bit too, because you wrote her so beautifully, right? Like it's a great scene. One of the things too, I love that I wrote, and even talking to you now, it's pretty clear you're a fan of this book. Right? And that's okay to say. There's nothing wrong with that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah. I got a kick out of it.
Yeah, yeah. So this is like the type of, this is sort of like something you would like, you're writing what you read in a way, aren't you?
Yeah. And then also like what I didn't read as a kid.
What was missing for you in stories and stuff?
Is definitely representation wise. And I liked a little more of like a crisis of humanity.
So this is a duology. Some people write backwards, right? I know authors that write the last scene first, or at least have a good idea of what it's going to be. Did you outline this?
The first one or the, I guess I don't really outline. I'm really bad with it because it ends up being my first drafts are bad because I don't have a plot. No, I do have a plot, but like I don't have an outline that like tightens it. I just kind of go until like maybe at the 75% mark, my editor's like, can we have a synopsis? Because I just feel like, for one, like I don't really know where I'm going, and like it'll, like the ideas will come to me as I'm writing. Like, I don't know. It's just like,
yeah. So you're a pantser, right? You're a senior pants type of person.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously we can't talk about the ending of the entire story, but like this ending, like this is how you end a book one, Zoe. Like the ending of this book is so great. Everyone else like needs to read this book and just copy it, like steal it, steal this idea. Cause this is how you end a book one, and it's impossible to talk about it without spoilers. So we can't, right. But you know, you bring everything to a head, and then just when you think things are going great, it goes to shit. you leave so much room for the next story, and it's a really great ending. That's why I asked. I'm just wondering how far ahead you sort of mapped it out, and you said you're sort of like going by the seat of your pants there, but you must have had a somewhat of an idea, because it really does end in a perfect spot.
Yeah, I definitely wanted like series potential,
right?
And I don't know, like, I definitely start writing and I don't use a synopsis. Part of the reason why I don't use a synopsis is because I don't want to spoil it for myself. It's ridiculous, but that's where I'm at. But I definitely did want, like, that kind of uncertainty, I guess, sure, slightly at the end, so I could build off, you know, a second or a third book. Like, originally, my agent, this didn't go through, but my agent pitched it as a trilogy to my publisher. Okay. My editor originally was like, actually, we're only going to take Gearbreakers as a standalone. And then she was like, let's keep the ending the exact same. I was like, okay.
Really?
Yes. And right. And then she caved, like, when she was doing my line edit, she was like, actually, let's do a second book. And I was like,
oh. You're like, yeah, no shit. You're like, yeah, I have it right here. Yeah. Well, that's, God, I mean, if I had read this to find out there was no second book, I would have like burnt something down. I would have like burnt buildings down, or I would have had to just write it myself, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, no, there's no way. It ends way too well. Or I guess I should say it doesn't end so well. Right? Like, because, you know, yeah, no, there's, I can't, I'm like, I'm, I really want to read Gearbreakers too.
I'll definitely make sure you're getting an ARG. Don't worry when it comes out. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah. Do you have I'm not asking you to tell us what it is, but do you have a title yet for that? Or
I don't have a title. I want to release it, but I don't know when I'm allowed to do anything.
So. No, they'll let you know when you're allowed. Yeah.
Yeah, I basically just wait around for like my editor to tell me to do stuff. So I don't know what's going on.
they definitely won't want you to release it before this book comes out. So.
Yeah.
But they'll let you know. But okay, so you've got the title. Any cover art yet, or is it way too early for that?
Oh, I got some cover sketches a couple weeks ago.
Is it Taj again?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, so okay. I was really excited because he did, of course, a fantastic job with the first one. I'm excited. They're going to look so good together, I think.
Yeah, you posted something yesterday about finishing the last edit and you were, you know, mourning and lighting candles. And we took that as, what have you done, Zoe? Who have you hurt? So this thing's got to, you know, yeah, there's like, this is, it's a great combination of like, you know, fancy tech versus just like, you know, just eating a lot of dirt, right? Like having no food. But one of the cool things are these cryo gloves. Where'd you come up with the cryo gloves? It's really cool because they're elemental too, right? And it's hard to get too specific with them because it does get spoilery. But just talk about sort of like the idea behind the cryo gloves and the fact that they're elemental.
Yeah, I definitely wanted that like kind of like it's tech, but it's like a fantastical element kind of.
Right.
They're kind of like deifying in a way, because Eris and Jenny are kicking around with a complex kind of, so I was just like, let's give them powers to match, kind of similar to the ones the mechas have, but they're in the hands of a 17-year-old, so like, that could be fun. But I just wanted something kind of grand for her, and I can't name something specific that made me think of it, but right. Definitely like with the contrast between like Jenny's magma gloves and Eris's cryo gloves, I was like, I just think it'd be cool.
On one level it's just like a lot of good versus a lot of bad, but it's complicated, right? There are people with different motivations and trying you know, have different aims, and some people just want, you know, to peacefully coexist even though it's not great for them, right? Because the powers that be have certain ideas on how things should be ran, and you know, what, without getting sort of too deep in the weeds here, because this is the type of thing where it can really kind of spin out of control narrative wise mm-hmm. Like when you're writing, you know, trying to build a society like this and have clear lines of good versus evil, but at the same time understand that it's really complicated. And was there you know, any part of you that, because I've one, the point I'm trying to make is that, you know, even through all of it, and there's some like a lot of like dramatic, serious conflict going on that implies like a lot of like crazy moralistic stuff and society stuff that we can hold up a mirror and look at our own selves. But you never sort of lose sense of like, it's still like there's a lot of fun and action and adventure stuff throughout the whole thing. So you've really found a great balance there. Were you conscious of that at all? Like trying to like, did you find yourself maybe getting too serious on occasion? You're like, hey, I need to dial this back a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. I was, I definitely wanted to keep like this contemporary beat to it. And I was like, how do I weigh that where it's like, you know, even though like I definitely did want to make the world kind of like make like open up an argument about humanity where it's like there can be sides that are clearly drawn, but it's always going to be more complicated if you look closer because humans are so messy and like distinct and individual, and it's always going to like it makes it so like even though the sides seem black and white, it's not, because of, you know, just the people who make them up. But I was like, how do I make it like a lighter, like more hopeful tone? And I was like, oh, just like hope. It's just, you give them like love, the characters, and you give them something to fight for. And I don't know, I think that always just softens it up.
It does. Yeah. Love's always a great sort of, you know, zone buster, right? When it comes to, you know, like fighting the forces, anything that powerful and that, especially people that like perceive themselves as godlike, I guess we'll say, you know, is a good way to put it without getting too detailed. Speaking of flawed humans, Jenny, Eris has a sister named Jenny, who's and flawed's a bad word because she's great. But she's she's definitely, you know, got a particular sensibility, and she's all business, isn't she, a lot of the times. And we learn why. Like, you do, you know, you do a lot of really cool little flashbacks, right? Sort of like piecing together why people are the way they are and why they act the way they do. And long story short, it's because things have been shitty for a long time. And yeah. You know, like, so you really write that relationship so well. Do you have a sister? Or
I do not have a sister.
Okay, because you wrote the sisterhood part is you know, it might be the most important relationship in this book in a lot of ways. Maybe
Yeah.
So talk about just sort of like building that, because a lot of times when I've read these books, and I've read a couple lately where the sisters in the book are like fucking superheroes. They're really great. And then I've talked to the author and they're like, yeah, I have a sister and that's how we are. So it's like, oh, okay, that makes sense. You can see where that inspiration came from. But what about you? Was there anybody, maybe not, obviously not a sister, but somebody in your life that sort of where you're like, that's Jenny. That's my Jenny.
I don't even think so. My the name Jenny is my older cousin, but okay. She's nothing like Jenny in the book.
I hope not.
Yeah, but like definitely like growing up, she was like a sister to me. Like I can't make it clear enough. We are nothing like the relationship.
Understood. Yeah. But even just having somebody sort of like, did you have somebody who was overprotective or just really looked out for you? You know, and tough like it's there's a lot of tough love right between Jenny and. And yeah. Dennis, right?
Yeah. I have a younger brother and he is like so wise. Like, I think you read the acknowledgments, but
yeah,
like,
I did. Yep.
He's younger than me. He's just like, just old soul. Okay. And like, again, nothing like me or like Eris and Jenny, but like definitely like looking out for each other in kind of like a scrappy way, I suppose.
So that's just, you know, like I said, Jenny's like, you know, she's a top three character, right? And she's really great. And you wrote her really, really well. And like I said, there's some flashback scenes that are really important and they were just written so well. Because at first you're like, I'm not sure about Jenny. But by the end of the book, you're like, Team Jenny. But the whole cast is great. I really, you get a lot with very little in your writing, Zoe. And like, you just sort of give each gear breaker just a second or two here and there. But you really get a sense of who they are and why they're fighting and, you know, the reasons for their actions. And that goes for the other side too, right? With a lot of the pilots, the mech pilots and stuff, you spend just enough time with them where you get to know them a little bit and becomes a situation where, you know, there's of course a few that you don't mind getting their arm cut off, let's say, for example, but there's a couple where you're like, yeah, I don't know if they deserve that necessarily. Because, you know, when you're on, a lot of times you're blind to all else, right? When you're sort of caught on one side of the line. And, you know, was that a goal of yours to sort of create some sympathy on both sides? Because like we talked about earlier, like in a situation like this, there's like the line between good people and bad people is just surviving, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I definitely like, I don't want to kill any like side characters without like giving them like a moment of personality, just because like they'd be human, they would have a personality, like you know, it's never just like a face, like the other side is like not faceless, you know,
right? Absolutely. which is true in almost any real war too. Oh, yeah. Right. I mean, it's like, it's so complicated, isn't it? Like just that's just real life shit. That's one of the great things about this book, that yeah, there's like paladins and valkyries and like 200 foot fucking things flying through the air, like, you know, things blowing up, but then there's just this tactility to the story, right? Where it's like you can taste the dirt, you can feel the heat, you can, you know. And there's a couple of, like I said, there's a couple of brutal scenes where, like, you know, there's some people die and you're just like, I'm like, my gosh, this is, you know, didn't see that coming. And, but again, at that point, you've gotten to know some of these people just a little bit, enough anyways, to where you're like, no. But it's, you get it. It's probably just, that's just part of storytelling too, right? Because ultimately we want, two people to find each other, stay together, hopefully, maybe survive the entire book two as well. I don't know. We'll see. Frostbringer and Glitch. God, there's that scene at the end, Zoe. anyways, so Gearbreakers comes out June 29th. This book has, it's got a ton of action, like we've talked about. Just, we've barely scratched the surface here. Like, it's got a ton of action, but it's got a ton of heart. It's got a ton of emotional resonance to it. It's got a lot of real world sort of implications to it as well. It's kind of got a bit of everything. And normally in some books, that's kind of a fucking mess, but it's not in this one. So, like, I got to tell you, I loved it. And I think you did such a great job of balancing all these different themes and things going on. And you could have lost control of it at any point, but you didn't. And I don't know how, but you didn't. So I guess we'll just have to chalk it up to you being a great writer. And I really can't wait for Gearbreakers 2, man. Like, just, it's killing me because I know it's a year away. I know I get these things a little early. I'm lucky, very fortunate that way. So I won't have to wait a year, but I'm going to have to wait. Anything longer than a day is too long. So I just, congratulations. It's so great. We're still a month away from the release, but do you know of any sort of events or anything you got planned for it that you want to talk about, or
I'll be having a virtual book launch with Elliott Bay Book Company. It's this great indie bookstore in Seattle with Nina Varela, who wrote the Choir's War series.
Yep.
And then I think Day Of, it's still up in the air, but I'm trying to get my author friends together.
Yeah.
And we can hang out. So try to live stream it. I don't know what's going on, but more.
Yeah. Setting stuff up. it's kind of a weird time because like normally we'd be talking about, you know, what cities are you going to for your book tour, and you know, what conventions are you going to go to, and but we're not there yet, are we? I don't even know, like, what's the big you're in Seattle right now, right?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, what's the big one? Emerald Con, right, is the big one.
Yeah.
Have they made any decisions there yet? Are they going to do one this year, or?
I think Comic-Con's going virtual. I'm unsure because it's like, is it the entire thing or just certain cities?
I'm in Toronto, so Toronto is definitely not going to have their big one this year. The one I go to every year and my favorite is New York Comic Con, and they're actually doing an in-person one, but they're also doing a virtual one too, so I'm not sure how that's going to work, but and I think it might be a little too soon for me. I think I'm a little too, yeah, like I'm not.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I've had one vaccination. I haven't had two yet. Have you had any, or?
I'm fully vaccinated, but still, like, I don't know. I'll be watching TV with crowds in it and I'll get like uncomfortable.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Like I can't imagine. I mean, you know, these cons get so freaking busy and you're shoulder to shoulder. And like the New York Comic Con one, they were talking about, they were reading like some of the rules and guidelines, and it's like no handshakes, no hugging, no touching, no this, no that. And I'm just like, well, but like, what about books? Yeah. Like, how are you supposed to? Do I have to wipe the book down when somebody hands it to me, or like it's sort of just? I mean, not listen. I'm not a big touchy guy, anyways. Like, it's not. I don't go there, you know, to hug people. But like, it'd be nice to like maybe shake someone's hands. I don't know, like, or whatever, right? But yeah, I don't know. I think it's too soon. But yeah, no, that's kind of a bummer though, because it'd be great to see you. One of these sort of like weird fetishes that I have is I like watching people meet the people they admire, and I love watching people meet authors and get to tell them how great their book is, and I get a kick out of it, right? That's one of the reasons why I like conventions. I love seeing people, you know, happy in their happiest moments, and right, you've been to cons, so it's just so great, right? So yeah, I kind of feel bad for you and other debut authors this year who have never get to miss out on that, because you never get your first release ever again, right?
Yeah,
so it's kind of listen, I'm sorry I'm bumming you out.
Oh, no, you're good.
I'm making it worse.
No, you're good.
But Gearbreakers 2, there'll be a big worldwide tour, right?
Yeah, totally. Like, yeah. I have tons of opportunities in the future.
International tour for Gearbreakers 2.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll look for those online events. And obviously, we can find you at ZoeHanamakuta.com, and you're on all the social feeds and everywhere else. So, Zoe, thank you so much. I'm going to look out for those virtual events. So if you get any stupid questions, that'll be me. They'd be like,
okay, cool.
Like, that's Steve.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Thank you so much for coming on. There you have it. Another episode of Everything is Canon all wrapped up. Huge thanks to Zoe for taking the time to speak with me today. I had a great time, and she's definitely a very cool person, so if you ever get the chance, I recommend you chat with her. Gearbreakers is a breakout novel, to be sure, and we are going to be reading Zoe's books for a long, long time. I guarantee it. It's out now, so head on over to zoehanamakuta.com to order your copy today or find out what else Zoe has going on. As always, be sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you choose to listen, and head on over to cinelinks.com for the latest movie, TV, books, and gaming news. Please continue to be safe out there. Bye for now.